All right, Rabosei, good morning. Let us begin. A beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Chaf Dalet. We are picking up on Chaf Gimel Amud Beis 23b. And we are picking up, Tani Chada, which is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 lines up from the bottom. Baruch Hashem, to thank all of our Shear sponsors, to thank our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Shvat, Ed and Faith Wolf, for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drushos this month in memory of Faith's mother, Nessa Bas Velvel, Zichron Levrach. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Hashem will have an Aliyah and the family a Nechama. To thank our sponsors for the week of learning, the Weisport children, in memory of their grandmother, Shena Chana Bas Harav Yaakov Yitzchak Halevi Zichron Levracha, and Jack Bennett, in memory of his grandfather, Rafael Beniashvili. Did I get it correct? Baruch Hashem, we hope then in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an Aliyah, and the families a Nechama, and we welcome Jack's father to the Shir this morning as well. Baruch Haba, welcome. And we'll see with that, let us begin. So we have an interesting case here. Tanechada. Tzor Adam Tfilav in Ma'osav Ba'afar Kususo. V'tanya Idach Lo Yatzar. Jabose, one Bryce says as follows, that a person can wrap up his tefillin with his money, Ba'afar Kususo. Now if you look at Rashi, Afar Kususo, Rashi says over here, five lines up from the bottom, Afar Kususo, Sudar Shal Rosh. This refers literally again to a scarf worn around the head, like a turban. Now the truth is, Rashi on Chaf Dalet Amud Alef, because it's going to come up again, Rashi and Chaf Dalet Amud Alef find that the way their turban used to work was as follows. They would have a turban obviously wrapped around their head, but there would be two pieces of material that would come down the sides. So the image over here is wrapping up your tefillin and your money in this turban together. So one Braisa says that you're allowed to do it. One Braisa says that you're not allowed to do it. To which the Gemara says it's not a contradiction. Lo kasha, hada azamne, hada lo azmine. So we'll say, the Gemara says it depends. If you went ahead, now we'll say the truth is, just to illustrate over here, in this case, you're not actually wearing the turban. You're utilizing the turban now to wrap up your money and to wrap up your tefillin. So one Braisa says that you can do this. One Braisa says that you can't do this. To which the Gemara says it's not a contradiction. Everything depends. Were you miyache? Did you go ahead and particularly set aside this turban to be used to wrap up your tefillin or not? If you used your turban, if you set it aside to wrap up your tefillin, then halacha lemaisa, it cannot be used for something else. However, if you have not gone ahead and set aside that turban for the use of tefillin, then you can use it even interchangeably for tefillin and for money. Also, this is introducing us to the concept of the Amr of Chista, High Sujud the Tfilin, the Azmane le Meitzar Beit Tfilin, Tsar Beit Tfilin, Asr le Meitzar Babshiti, Azmane velo Tsarbe, Tsarbe velo Azmane, Shar le Meitzar Beit Zuzi. Because the Rav Chista said that if you have a particular sudra, you have a particular turban, but again, to be clear, in this case, you're not utilizing it as a turban, but instead, what did you do? If you went ahead and Azmane, you set it aside to be used to wrap up your tefillin. In other words, you set it aside to be used as a tefillin bag. So once you go ahead and use it for the first time for tefillin, you're not allowed to use it for something else. For example, for money. However, if you set it aside, you designated it. That's what I'm looking for. If you designated it for tefillin, but you did not actually put tefillin in there, or you went ahead and you put tefillin in there, but you did not designate it, then ultimately, again, you are permitted to use it for money. So we'll say, so this gets into the very interesting discussion about what happens when you use something as a tefillin bag. So do we say that once you use it as a tefillin bag, it cannot be used for something mundane or not? So Rav Chista is of the opinion as follows. If you designated it as a tefillin bag, and then you subsequently used it for tefillin, you may not use it for something else. However, if you used it for tefillin, but did not designate it for that purpose, or you designated but have not used it yet, you can use it for something else. Or in other words, according to Rav Chista, the only time that the bag becomes actively designated for tefillin is if A, there was a designation, and B, there was use. So just so you can imagine this, you have a tefillin bag, right? It's a very nice tefillin bag. You decide one day, you know, somebody gives you a gift, 3-year-old gives you a gift of another tefillin bag. You say, you know what? I have a great use for this. It's a nice embroidered lunch bag. I'm going to use it as my lunch bag. It already has my name on it. It's fantastic. It's beautiful. No one's going to get it confused with their lunch when I put it in the fridge, right? No one's going to take the velvet bag with the name on it, right, for their lunch. It's a great idea. So Rav Chisda says, can I do that or not? So Rav Chisda will say, it depends. If ultimately, again, you designated that bag as a tefillin bag and you've used it for tefillin, you cannot repurpose it for something else. But halacha lemaaseh, if it's been designated but not used, or used but never formally designated, then ein hachinami, you could repurpose it for something else. Ula Abaye damar hazman milsihi. But I will say, that's according to Rav Chisda. Abaye, on the other hand, has a different opinion. And Abaye says that halacha lemaaseh, designation is enough. Once you designate something for a particular purpose, then halacha lemaaseh, that is enough. Ula Abaye damar hazman milsihi. If you went ahead and you designated it, even if you did not actively put the tefillin in there, ultimately, hazmana milsa, designation is significant, and therefore designating the item for use for tefillin is enough, even if one hasn't actively used it for tefillin. So we'll say, so that's just interesting. So just interesting lemaisa discussion. Now it happens to be that the Shulchan Aruch Paskins like Rav Chisda, and therefore again, in order for something to be designated, let's say for example in this case as a tefillin bag, the two steps are required: hazmana, designation, and active use for that particular purpose. But if you have one without the other, you could decide to repurpose the tefillin bag ultimately for something else. So we'll say, interesting shayla. Can I go ahead and put my tefillin underneath my head? They both say, now what is this talking about? Look at the last Rashi, or I should say Rashi on the last line. Just appreciate what's happening over here. I want to safeguard my tefillin. That's what's driving this discussion. I want to safeguard my tefillin. So I have a great trap. I'm going to put my tefillin under my pillow. That way, again, it's safeguarded. The problem, of course, is the tefillin is under my pillow. So the Gemara says, if you notice, obviously, the Gemara doesn't ask if I could put my tefillin underneath my feet, because that, of course, again, is considered to be a degradation to the tefillin. So what's the shayla? Can I put my tefillin underneath my pillow, under my head? Or I should really say, I shouldn't get the pillow yet. It is under my head. Can I put my tefillin under my head when I go to sleep at night? Shmuel said, yes, it's absolutely mutter, afilo ishto imo. Even if one is sleeping in the same bed as his wife. Now, what does that mean? So what Shmuel's adding over here is as follows. Not only is it permitted, but what? If one's sleeping in the same bed as their wife, it's possible they're going to have relations. Even if there's the possibility of relations, ultimately, again, one is still permitted to keep his tefillin underneath his head. So I'm going to say, just again, so you understand what's driving this. This is not someone who's looking to add more kedusha into his life and therefore has decided to sleep with tefillin under his head. The motivation of this is the safety, secure, and tefillin. So remember, again, this goes back to yesterday's discussion where we've already seen that what? There's a little bit of room to compromise what we'll call the cover of the tefillin for the sake of what? For the sake of the safety, right? This gets into the whole Beis HaKise discussion. The ability to bring your tefillin into the bathroom. Beis HaKise Kavua, Beis HaKise Arai. How does this discussion even get off the ground? Because again, when it's a choice between the safety and dignity of the tefillin, the halacha allows for a little bit of a compromising of the dignity to ensure safety. So that's the Shmuel saying, yes, you can sleep with your tefillin underneath your head, even if your wife is with you. So meisvei lo yaniach adam tefillin tachas miraglosav. So we learned that a person should not put their tefillin underneath their feet when they go to sleep, because this is too degrading. But you could put your tefillin underneath your head when you go to sleep. But if your wife was with you, aser. Then that's aser. So we'll say this brisa contradicts Shmuel. And whereas this brisa ultimately allows for tefillin to be put underneath the head, you are not permitted to put your tefillin underneath your head if your wife is with you. But however, if there was a place, like almost like if you could imagine like a ledge by the bed, that is three tefachim higher or three tefachim lower than the bed, meaning that the tefillin is not on bed level. It's not on bed level, then mutter. Ultimately, again, this is mutter, to which the Gemara says, Tiyufta di Shmuel Tiyufta. We'll say this Braisa effectively refuted Shmuel. Mishnah refuted Shmuel, right? Because again, Shmuel said that you could put tefillin underneath your head, even if your wife is with you. And here it's been pretty concretely and explicitly said, you could put your tefillin underneath your head, but not if your wife is with you. So Amar Rava, this is so interesting. Amar Rava, Afa gav d'tanya tiyufta di Shmuel. So says, even though we just refuted Shmuel, Hilchasa kavase, the halacha follows Shmuel. I said only Jews can speak like this, right? Right? Even though we just effectively refuted Shmuel, nevertheless, the halacha is like Shmuel, that you're allowed to put your tefillin underneath your head, even if your wife is with you. My taima, what's the reason? Top of Chav Dalid, kol linturinhu tfei adif. So we'll say this is what we just said before. Because whatever you can do to safeguard your tefillin, even if it results in a bit of the compromising of the dignity of the tefillin, is important to do. Take a look at Rashi. Kol interinu tve adif lehu mibizyone. Kimashu mushar al shmirasa min ha'achbarim u min ha'ganavim tve adif lehu mibizyone. So we'll say, so a very interesting idea. So halacha lamaisa. Even though, again, this results in a degradation of the tefillin, since halacha lemaisa, this allows for the safeguarding of the tefillin, you're allowed to do it. So I'm going to say, see, here you have, so comes along Rava, and said, even though we effectively refuted Shmuel, halacha lemaisa, the halacha follows him. I'm Rabbi Yirmiyah. So Rabbi Yirmiyah qualifies this ruling. Being Karla Keses, Shelo Kineged Arosh. When we speak about putting the tefillin under your head, that's not literal. But rather, under your head means what? Between your pillow and your mattress. So you are not directly putting your tefillin on your head, but rather, again, tefillin is underneath my pillow. So we'll say, so Reb Chiya goes ahead and he expounds on this, and he says what you should do is, you should put the tefillin in a bag underneath your pillow with the bulge of the bag ultimately extending outside of the pillow. Which I will say effectively means what? So you're putting the tefillin in a bag, that's number one, putting it underneath the pillow, but the bulge represents the part of the bag in which the tefillin sits, have that part extend outside from the pillow, which essentially means that what? Your head is not really on top of the tefillin. So meaning your tefillin are placed underneath your pillow, because that way, again, there's some level of safeguarding. So the bag itself, or a part of the bag, is underneath the pillow, but the tefillin themselves extend outside. Bar Kafra, Tzayir Luhu Bekilsa, Umafik Lumar Shehen Labar. So Bar Kafra, we'll say what he would do is, if you can imagine, so it seems to be describing over here like a canopy bed, right? So Bar Kafra had like a canopy bed. He would tie the tefillin in the curtain of the canopy, but would have the tefillin facing outwards. So the tefillin weren't facing towards the inside of the bed, but rather were facing away from the bed. So the Gemara goes back. Rav Shisha Bar Idi Manach Luhu Ashar Shifa Uparis Sudra Alayhu. So Rav Shisha Bar Idi would put his tefillin on a stool in the bedroom and would go ahead and place a shawl over the stool. So we'll say, again, remember, we're going to get into some of these halachos that in a bedroom, one has to be careful as to what dvarim shebikdusha, as to what holy items they have there. Both because in a bedroom, a person engages in relations. In a bedroom, a person also is obviously unclothed. So therefore, a person has to be cognizant as to what items they keep in a bedroom. So ideally, you wouldn't keep your tefillin in your bedroom. That's not the ideal placement for your tefillin. So what they would do is he would put his tefillin on a bench and cover up the tefillin. I will say, just so you understand, this comes up lamaise all the time, meaning mezuzahs. You know, sometimes people like to have the clear cases for their mezuzahs. But again, on a bedroom, generally we do not put clear mezuzahs, right? Even though technically speaking, you could close the door and ultimately the idea is you don't put clear tefillin on, you don't put clear mezuzahs on bedroom doors. Amar Rav Hamnuna Brei D'Rav Yosef, Zimna Chada Hava Ka'inna Kamei D'Rava. V'Amar, so listen to this. This is an incredible story. So Rav Hamnuna said, one time I was standing in front of Rava, V'Amar Li, and he said to me, Rava said to me, Zil I see li tefillin. go bring me my tefillin. So we'll say, this is Rav. So Rava said to Rav Hamnuna, can you please bring me my tefillin? Va'ashkechesinu ben karla kases shelo kineget harosh. And I found Rava's tefillin was underneath his pillow, right between the pillow and the mattress, with the bulge of the bag extending outside of the pillow. Va'hava yedana diyom tevila hava. And I knew that his wife went to the mikvah the night before. How exactly Rav Hamnuna knew that, I'm not sure. Could be maybe the positioning of the beds, whatever it was. He knew that his wife had gone to the mikvah the night before. And therefore, again, Abbas says, this is amazing. So Rav Hamnuna said, I know why Rava sent me to get his tefillin. Rava sent me into the bedroom so that I should learn halacha l'maisa. What's halacha l'maisa? Number one, that you could keep your tefillin underneath your pillow as long as you're in a bag with the bulge extending outside of the pillow. Even if what? Even if your wife is with you. And I will say, not only even if your wife was with you, but remember again, there's a mitzvah for a husband to be with his wife on the night that she goes to the mikvah, which means that again, Rava had relations that night before. So even, not only with wife with you, but even if he ends up having relations with his wife, it is still permitted to keep the tefillin there under the pillow in this type of situation. An incredible, incredible story. So this is quite fascinating. And these following Gemara is obviously reflecting a profoundly different societal norm of you'll see. So the Gemara says as follows. Two people sleeping together in a bed. So we'll say, so the idea over here is Mahu Shazet Yachzer Panav Vikra Kriyashma. So we'll say, here's what we're talking about, is both people are unclothed. So the Shaila over here is, can they both go ahead and, now obviously, that's it. The assumption over here that we're talking about is that Halacha L'maisa, it's time to say Kriyashma. So what's the Shaila? So Rav says, we're going to discuss, Gemara is kind of jumping ahead a couple of steps, but Halacha L'maisa, we will see that one is not permitted to go ahead and recite Kriyashma in the presence of what we'll call Erva. Erva loosely translates as nakedness. But again, we'll discuss that it actually has a much more expansive definition. But the question over here is, two people are in bed together, both unclothed. So can they turn back to back? Can they turn back to back and go ahead and recite Shema? Amar lehaki amar Shmuel. Shmuel said, afilo ishta imo. Shmuel said, yes. And this, even if one is in bed with one's wife. So look at Rashi. Afilo ishta imo. Sheyachzer panov. Dechol zman shein ponim panim kineged ponim. Pshitle da'aser. Di'ika hirhur nigias erva ayedei evari tashmish. So obviously, if a man is in bed with his wife and both are unclothed and they're facing each other, can't say Kriyashma under those circumstances. But if they turn their backs to each other, then ultimately they can say Shema. Maskif l'Rav Yosef, ishto v'lomi b'yacher, are you telling me again that his wife is the Chiddush and not someone else? Adraba, ishto kigufo, acher lav kigufo. I don't understand. I'll say just the opposite. I would say his wife is like an extension of himself. That's why I could understand why ultimately, again, if they turn back to back, they could say Shema. But if it's someone other than his wife, why do you assume that this works? Meisveis, Gemara is the kasha. We'll say first wide line, Chavtal Ramad Aleph, Shnayim Shiyishinim Achos Zeh. I'm sorry, Shayim Shiyishinim Amita Achos. Two people are sleeping, and Abbas said the assumption always is unclothed. In one bed, so each one turns to the opposite way, they turn back to back to each other, and they're both able to recite Shema. That's one braisa. Petanya Achrisi, Hayoshin Bamita, Ubanav Ubne Beiso Betsido, Hare Ze Lo Yikra Kriyashma, Ele Imkin Haisa Talis Mafsekes Beinehen. But yet, then you have another braisa. The other braisa says that if a person is in bed, Banav Bnei Beiso, his children, extended Mishpacha, it's a party, right? Now what happens? I will say everybody is in bed together. And I will say, again, the assumption is unclothed. So what's the halacha? You can't recite Shema. You can't recite Shema unless, of course, there is like a talis, it doesn't literally mean like a talis like we think about it, but a sheet or a cover kind of in between each person. Elimkin haisa talisa mafsekizena, or I should say in between the person who wants to recite Kriya Shema and everyone else. Im hayu banav ubnei beiso ketanim mutter, but if his children are young, then ultimately again it is mutter. So bishlam of the Rav Yosef, lo kasha, so according to Rav Yosef, we'll say these two braisos do not pose a contradiction. Habi ishto, haba acher, one is talking about his wife, and one is talking about One is talking about someone else, El Shmuel Kasha, but according to Shmuel, how do you reconcile the two brises? Amar lecha Shmuel, Rav Yosef Minecha, according to Rav Yosef, does it really reconcile? Vatanya, Haya Yoshin Bemita, Ubanavu Bene Beso Bemita, Lo Yikar Kreshma, Ila Imkin, Haisa Talisim, Afsakes Benehen, Betra Bose. We have another brisa, and the brisa says that a person was sleeping in bed, and he has family members in bed with him. You should not recite Shema, unless, of course, there was a sheet interposing between him and everyone else. Rather, you have to say, Rabosa, that even the case of being in bed with one's wife is a machlokes tanoim lididi nami tanoihi. But according to me, it's a machlokes tanoim as well. So the Gemara opens up this fascinating discussion about essentially what is the status of halacha lamaisa being in bed unclothed with other people, be it one's wife or other family members, and the ability to say Shema. Now, the Gemara framed this case as being understood and obvious that let's say even a husband and wife can't be facing each other at a time for to say Shema, but they can turn back to back. To which the Gemara says, Amar Mar, Machzir Panavikori Kriya Shema. So the way we frame the question is, let's say again, I will say taking a simple case of a husband and wife in bed together, unclothed. Mm-hmm. It's time to say Shema. So what happens? They both figure, we'll just turn around. Now we'll say, now when they turn back to back, the assumption the Gemara is making is that their backs are touching. Their backs are touching. So the Gemara says, Vahaika agavos. There's the backside, right? The backsides which are touching. Does that not... So people say, what's the issue? The issue is the reason they can't be front to front is a concern of arousal. You can't recite Shema in that type of situation. So is there not that same concern if they're touching back to back as well? Agvos ein bahen mishum erva. So we'll say this goes going to Rav Huna. It's actually very interesting. Rav Huna holds that the backside of a person is not considered erva. It's not considered nakedness. So also we could support Rav Huna in this as well. Ha'isha yosheves v'kotza l'chalosa aruma. This is actually a fascinating case. A woman could go ahead and sit on the ground unclothed and separate chalo. Why? Because when she is sitting, she has the ability to cover her nakedness in the ground. Whereas when a woman is sitting, so the makom erva, if she's sitting in the ground, the makom erva could be covered by the ground. Avaloha ish, but obviously a man can't do this, because even if a man is sitting on the ground, the makom erva is still exposed. Tregemar of Nachan by Yitzchak, what's the case? So you see from here also, now again, I will say in that case, the makom erva might be covered, but her backside may not be. So you see from here that the backside is not considered to be erva. To which the Gemara says, maybe not. So we'll say, interesting enough, if you look at Rashi, almost right across, Kegon Shaya Panah Tochos, Tivukos Umechusos Bekarka, Tochos Mashmaloshun Shios Tiach Chalak Sheina Boltos. So we'll say, interestingly enough, the Gemara says it could be that the case of where she's sitting in the ground is softer dirt, where essentially she sinks into the dirt. If she sinks into the dirt, not only is the erva covered, but the backside is covered as well. Amar Mar. So therefore, again, the Gemara seems to be indicating over here that either halacha lemaisa, if the husband and wife turn back to back, either it's that even if their backs are touching, that's not called nigias erva, that's not called erva contact, or the other possibility is that they could turn back to back without their backs touching, and that's enough ultimately to allow for the recitation of Shema. Amar Mar. So we said before that what? If one is in bed, ultimately again with young children, in the same bed as members of his household, and they're kitanim, that it does not pose a problem of erva vis-a-vis kriyashma. Vad kama, how old is young? Amr av chista, tinokes bas shalosh shana v'yom echad, v'tinok ben tes shana v'yom echad. Rav Chista said for a girl, 3 years old in one day, for a boy, 9 years old in one day. Until these ages, there's no issues of sexuality surrounding children this young, and therefore halacha lemaisa, there's no problem to recite Shema even if you're in bed unclothed with children this age. Ikid Amri, tinokes basir alef shana v'yom echad, tinok ben shteimesay shana v'yom echad. Others say it's bar or bas mitzvah. Idi v'idi, Rabbi will say, either way, the idea is, ad shadayim nachonu v'sarech tzimeach. Rabbi will say, either way, the issue is, up until the point of physical development. The idea being that once the child begins to physically develop, then they're considered to be an adult, really almost irrespective of the age, and therefore again the ability to recite Kriyat Shema in their presence unclothed becomes prohibited. Amar li Rav Kana Rav Ashi, Hasam Avarava, Af al gav de tiyufta de shmul hilchasa kabasi de shmul. So Bosi, we said before that even though what? Even though we effectively refuted the position of Shmuel, the halacha follows him. So the shaila, of course, is hacha mai. Rabbi say, do we say over here in this case that the halacha follows Shmuel as well? Amar le, atu kulo bechada machta machtinu. Did we weave the entire fabric in one time? In other words, Rabbi say, just because we said the halacha follows Shmuel over there, it doesn't mean the halacha follows Shmuel over here. Hello, hechad de itmar itmar, vehechad de lo itmar lo itmar. When we say the halacha follows Shmuel, it follows Shmuel. But when we don't have an explicit misrah that the halacha follows Shmuel, ultimately, again, we don't necessarily say that the halacha follows Shmuel. So we'll say, even though, again, Shmuel said over here that halacha lemaisa, a man could recite Shema unclothed, even if he and his wife are in bed together unclothed, as long as they're back to back. The Gemara says, just because we said that the halacha is like Shmuel before, namely, that you could sleep with tefillin under your pillow, assuming that what? They're in a bag, and the bulge of the bag extends outside of the pillow, doesn't automatically mean that the halacha follows Shmuel in this case over here. So the Gemara goes weiter. Amar Rav Mari Rav Papa, Siar Yotzi Bebigdom Mahu. So we'll say, what happens? The interesting case. And what happens if you look at Rashi, Siar Yotzi Bigdo, Sheneka Bigdo, Vyotse Zakin Atachton, Vyotse Minaser Benekev. Now, I will say, now the Gemara has an interesting question. Now that we're getting into a discussion about Erva, so the Gemara says, I will say, now we've established about what Erva is, that the backside is not Erva. The Gemara says, what's the status of pubic hair? Does pubic hair have the status of Erva? So you have to understand something. See, these conversations sound exceptionally strange to us. And I will say, but that's because at the end of the day, just our societal norms are different. Our clothing is different. The way we sleep is different. There's a lot of different things that are different. So I will say, but again, when the Gemara brings up these kashas, that's because these were contemporary situations that they ran into. So if pubic hair is visible, does that represent erva? So we'll say, so just so you understand, we're going to explicitly delve into this a bit more, but the idea is you cannot recite Kriyat Shema in the presence of nakedness, quote unquote nakedness. So the shaila is, what constitutes nakedness? So we know male genitalia, female genitalia represents nakedness. Okay, we'll say, so what about the backside of a person? Is that nakedness? Is that not nakedness? So I'll say, it appears from the Gemara over here that it doesn't have the status of nakedness. Pubic hair, does that have the status of nakedness? So the Gemara says, so we'll say, Rapapa said, it's just hair. I was about to say, so essentially, interestingly enough, so what Rapapa said is that pubic hair has no different designation than any other kind of hair, and therefore halacha lemaisa is not considered to be erva. Quite interesting. Amar Rav Yitzchak, so I was about to say, so now this opens up a fascinating discussion, which once again is another discussion we're not going to have the time to do justice to, but in Meretz Hashem, you'll be ma'ayin in it on your own. Amar Rav Yitzchak, tefach be'isha erva. I was say, literally what this means is as follows. The halacha is that there are certain parts of the body that are supposed to be covered. If a woman has an uncovered part of her body that is normally covered, that is called erva. So we'll say, now what we're just doing over here is we are dramatically expanding the definition ultimately of erva. That not only does erva mean, quote unquote, like genitalia, but any part of the body which is normally covered, if it's uncovered, then ultimately, again, that's called erva. So if a woman has a tefach of her body that is uncovered, on a part of the body that is normally covered, then halacha lamai, so that's called the erva. Now we'll say, now lamai, so okay, like what's the ramifications of this? We'll say this is incredible. Ilei melista kuliba, if you want to say it's because I'm not allowed to look at a part of a woman's body that is supposed to be covered and now is uncovered, so the Gemara says, v'ha, Amar Rav Sheshes, lama mana hakasuv takshidin shabachutz, im takshidin shabifnim. We'll say, interestingly enough, after the war with Midian, the Jewish people accumulated quite a good amount of spoils. So let's say, the Torah lists all of the different types of jewelry that they accumulated. Some, interestingly enough, were jewelry, were ornaments that were worn outside, and some were ornaments that were worn on more intimate parts of the body. Why does the Torah go ahead and go through the whole list? Lomar lecha, kala mistakel be'etzba kitana shel isha, ki'ilu mistakel makam ha'toref. So I will say, this is not talking about your wife. This is talking about a man who looks at another woman, even at her small pinky, right? Even at her pinky, for the sake of deriving benefit, pleasure, from gazing at her, that is as if he's looking directly at the place of her nakedness. The idea being, Rabosai, you are not allowed. We are not allowed to look at a woman. One is not allowed to look at a woman who is not his wife for the sake of deriving pleasure. I don't mean eye contact. That's not what I mean. You should make eye contact with everyone. I mean, again, the sake of gazing lustfully upon a woman for the sake of deriving pleasure, even on her small pinky, right? Even just looking at her pinky for the sake of deriving pleasure, ultimately, again, is fundamentally biblically prohibited. So the Gemara says, therefore, if you tell me, tefach bi'isha erva, if you tell me that if a woman has an uncovered part of her body that's normally covered, so we'll say, if you want to tell me that I'm not allowed to look at that part of her body, I can't look at any part of a woman's body, of someone who's not my wife, for the sake of deriving pleasure. Ela bi'ishto ulekriyashma. We'll say, this is a dramatic halacha. Rather, what is it coming to teach me? It's coming to teach me for my own wife, that if my wife is not fully clothed, and there's a part of her body that is exposed, right, that's normally covered, I can't say kriyashma in her presence. So we'll say, it's an incredibly dramatic halacha, that again, for Kriyat Shema purposes, one is not permitted to go ahead and recite Shema in the presence of what we'll call Erva. Now we're describing Erva, expanding the definition a bit, as a part of the body that's normally covered. And not only does this obviously apply to another woman, but it also applies even to one's wife. Amar Rav Chisda, Shok B'Isha Erva. Similarly again, the thigh of a woman is Erva. So we'll say again, the thigh is a part of the body that is normally covered. And therefore, halacha lamaisa, if it's uncovered, is considered to be erva. So the Gemara says, "Shene emar gali shok avrinaro suksiv tagel ervascha v'gam tirach erpascha." Amar Shmuel. So we'll say now that we started this Gemara, we're going to quote a number of these things. Kol biisha erva. We'll say kolisha. A man is not permitted to hear a woman sing, because the act of hearing a woman's voice ultimately, again, is erva as well. Shene emar quotes over here the pasuk. The pasuk from Shir HaShirim, Ki kolech arev umareich nava. Amar Rav Shesh, so like I said, we're not getting a chance to do a lot of these topics justice. So we'll say, just so you understand, even though it's nothing to do with our sugya right now, once we start talking about the concept of erva, the Gemara is going through the whole list of things that represent erva. See, hearing a woman sing, ultimately, again, is asr because of kalisha. Amar Rav Shesh, seyar bi'isha erva, a woman's hair, is erva as well. Shene emar sarich ke'ed ha'izim. Shabbos say, what would that mean ultimately again, if a woman's hair is erva? So remember, this gets into the entire discussion about hair covering, what's the nature. Again, we'll see these sugyas later on in greater depth. What is the nature of the obligation? What has to be covered? But Shabbos say, what it does tell you is something very interesting, which is that halacha lamaisa, if hair is erva, it would seem to indicate that halacha lamaisa, a man would not be permitted to recite Kriyat Shema in the presence of the uncovered hair of his wife, or for that matter, again, in the uncovered hair of any woman. Now, it happens, you both say, there is the famous Arach HaShulchan. And the famous Arach HaShulchan says that halacha lemaisa, since today, many people, for whatever the reason, again, we'll get into these halachas, don't necessarily observe this particular halacha. So it could be that the status of hair has fundamentally changed. And maybe hair doesn't have the same status of erva. Therefore, the Arach HaShulchan says there may be room to say that one could actually recite Kriyat Shema in the presence of uncovered hair, which actually gets into a fascinating discussion in general about, do the definitions of erva potentially change with societal norms? Which, of course, obviously, some definitions do not change, right? Some things, I want to go on record, sorry, some things will remain erva. And I will say, but the shaila is this definition somewhat fluid depending on societal standards? So again, we'll keep it as a topic sometime for the future. I'm Rabbi Chanina. Ani Ra'isi Rabbi Shetal Tfilof. So I'll say, Rabbi Chanina says, switching gears, I saw Rabbi hang his tefillin. Now I'll say what this sounds like over here. Rashi said, not actually, no Rashi yet. I saw Rabbi hang his tefillin. So the Gemara says, really? So the Gemara says, Meisvei, hatole tefilov yitlo lo chayiv. So let's listen to this. So the Gemara says, somebody who hangs his tefillin, ultimately his life should be hanged. Which is another way of saying, it's not good. Right? Don't hang your tefillin. So darshe chamuros amru v'hayu chayecha tulim l'cha mineged, zeh atole tefilov. So lo kasha, that's not a contradiction. Habiritzua habiketzitza. Both say, it's actually very interesting. So what shouldn't you do? What are you not allowed to do? You can't dangle your tefillin by the strap. So we'll say, if you can imagine for a moment, imagine you have like a peg. You have a peg. So what you're not allowed to do is hang your tefillin by the strap in a way that the bias, that the box is hanging down. That's considered to be disparaging to the tefillin. But what can you do? You could hang, if let's say, I guess you have a little bit of a wider peg, what you could do is you could put the bias on the peg and allow the straps to hang down. That's okay. That's considered to be bakavadik for the tefillin. Vibai sema, loshna ritzua v'loshna ketzitza aser. Others say, no, either way, you can't go ahead and hang the tefillin by the bias or by the strap. I v'chi tell the Rebbe, what did Rebbe do? Bekista. Rebbe had his tefillin in a bag, and what did Rebbe do? Rebbe hung the bag from the peg. That's okay. Ihachi ma'ila memra. If that's the case, what's there to say? Ma'u detemati by hanacha kesefer Torah. So what would you have thought? You would have thought that maybe tefillin is not allowed to be hung. Right. You can't put tefillin on a peg regardless. Right. I'm going to feel I have to just put tefillin on a table just like a sefer. Kamashwan know that you can't hang the tefillin by the bias or by the ritzus, but you can hang it by the bag. Anu v'chanino. Aniri isyes, Rebbe, will say, interesting case. I saw Rebbe, shegiek upiek v'nis atesh v'rak. I saw Rebbe, will say, now this is incredible. Rebbe Chanina saw all of this during Shmona Esrei. So I saw Rebbe, shegiek. Rebbe will say, giek means he burped. He burped. Piek means ultimately, again, he yawned, right? Nisatesh sounds like it means he sneezed. We'll see what this means, right? Right, virak, and he spit on the days. Umimashmish pebigdo, and he killed a louse in his clothing. All of this during Shmona Esrei. It was a long Shmona Esrei, right? A long Shmona Esrei. We'll say he did all of it during Shmona Esrei. Avalohaya misatef. But interestingly enough, if his talus was falling off, he would not fix his talus. He would not fix his talus. They will say, if you look at Rashi, Elohim Misatif, Imnafla Taliso Kishu Mispalo, Lohayo Notlo Misatif Shola Hafsik. Apparently, again, I will say, see, he would do all of these things. So just so you get it right. So Giek means he burped. Piek means he yawned. Nisatish, he sneezed. Rak, he spit. Memashmish Abigdo killed the louse. But he felt that adjusting his talus would be a Hafsik in the middle of Shmona Esrei. Okay, so let's analyze a little bit. Ukishu Mefaik. And ultimately, again, when he would yawn, what would he do? Haya maniach yado al sentero. They will say he would place his hand on his chin. They will say, why? Why? Simple etiquette. Don't yawn. No one needs to see that cavernous mouth of yours, right? So they will say, so the idea being, cover your mouth when you yawn. It is disrespectful. First of all, it's disrespectful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the middle of Shmona Esrei to yawn like that. And it's also a lack of kavod abrios to yawn like that as well. A person covers their mouth when they yawn. So we'll say now, listen to what we'll say. So this really gets into a fascinating discussion. So we begin a braisa. If a person raises their voice during Shmona Esrei, Rabbi will say, this is dafka during Shmona Esrei. So hareze miktani amuna. Ultimately, again, such a person lacks faith. Rabbi will say, why does such a person lack faith, says Rashi? Because remember, Shmona Esrei is a conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you raise your voice, what does it sound like? It sounds like you don't believe that God could hear your whisper. So therefore, you're talking loudly. So you lack emuna. So the Gemara says, if a person goes ahead and raises his voice during davening, such a person is amongst the false prophets. So we'll say this one, a person who davens very loud. So such a person is like the false prophets. This is a reference to the showdown between Elio and Nevi Habal, where the Nevi Habal were screaming out. So this is a way of the false prophets to go ahead and scream out to God. Megaik umefahik hareze megasi haruach. If a person goes ahead and burps, or a person goes ahead and yawns, this is a sign of arrogance. To do this during davening is a sign of arrogance. Hamisatesh bitfilah. So Rabbi will say, we're going to translate this now as a person sneezes during their davening. Simin ralo. That is a bad simin about. That's a bad omen for their prayers. Veishomrim nikar shehu mechuar. Others say that is demonstrative of the fact that you are a disgusting person. Okay. Harak bitfilah. So we'll define. Don't worry, we have time still. Harak bitfilah. So if a person spits in the middle of davening, Shmona Esrei. It's as if he's spitting in the presence of the king. So the Gemara says, Bishlama megahikum efayik. So it's not a contradiction. So we'll see here the Brisa says that you're not allowed to go ahead and burp or yawn. So the Gemara says, but yet we saw before that Rebbe did it. Lokashia, kan la'onso, kan l'irtsono. We'll say, if a person intentionally does this during davening, that's when it's arrogant. If it just happens, then ultimately, again, what are you going to do? Rabbi said, what about sneezing? Rebbe sneezed and it seemed to be okay. And here we're saying that sneezing is what? Sneezing is not good. So to which the Gemara says, Lokashia. I'm sorry. So, misadish, Lokashia. Kan mi lamalo, kan mi lamato. One is sneezing above, one is sneezing below. Well, so what does that mean? So a sneeze, right, that comes from your mouth, that comes from your mouth, is fine. What it's referring to, that's a simen ra, is flatulence. That if a person flatulates during Shmona Esrei, that is simen ra lo, right? That is a bad simen. That is a bad simen, because also, which makes sense, a person that happens to a person during davening, then what? Then halacha lamaisa, there's an odor that's created, and it almost indicates as if a person's tefillah is being rejected. Dan Rabbi Zera, hamil sa'iv lai li bei Rav Hanuna, v'tilka li kikuli hai tamuda. So we'll say, so Rav Zera said, I learned this halacha by Rav Hanuna, and it's as important to me as the rest of the Torah that I learned. Hamis atef bish tfilaso simen yafelo. If a person sneezes during davening, what's very interesting, if a person sneezes during davening, that is a good sign. Why? Kishim sha'osilo nachas ruach milamato, kach osil nachas ruach milamalo. Ultimately, again, if a person sneezes, we'll say it's a good omen. Why? Because it's the same when you sneeze. So there's a pressure that's released, right? There's a relief that's felt. The same way that you feel relief in this world, it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to grant you relief from above as well. But conversely, if a person flatulates during davening, that is a simen ra lo. That is a bad omen, almost of the Gemara, almost seems to indicate almost like a rejection of prayer. Ella rak arak kasha. We'll say, what about spitting? Right? On one hand, Rebbe spit, yet we're saying spitting is arrogance. To which the Gemara says, lo nami lo kasha. Efshak ki Rabbi Yehuda, damar Rabbi Yehuda, haya omid bitfila, viniz damin lo rok. If a person was in the middle of davening and he felt that he had to spit, right? There was too much of an accumulation of saliva, and he felt that he had to spit, mavliya bataliso. He could absorb the additional saliva in his talus. Well, so the idea is spit into your talus and ultimately absorb it into your talus. Then talus nahu, but ultimately again, if you like your talus, right? You have a nice talus, then what? Mavliya ba'afar kisuso. Then ultimately spit into your turban. That's what we said before. The turban, remember, that he used to wear was like a head thing, but then it had pieces of material that came down the sides. So just spit it into the sides. Ravina hava kaya harid Ravashi. So also Ravina was one time standing behind Ravashi. Nizdami lo rok. Ravashi had to spit. Paske la achore. And Ravashi spit behind him. Armorle lo savarle mar lahad Rav Yehuda mavliya b'afar kisuso. Do you not hold of what Rav Yehuda said? That you really shouldn't spit during Shmona Esrei, but you should spit into the turban and absorb it there. Armorle. Ana anina datoy. He said, I am a fastidious person, right? I am a mifunak. So because I am a mifunak, I can't spit into my clothing, have it absorbed there, and continue concentrating. Therefore, I just spit on the ground. Hamashmiya kolu b'tfilas ha'ezeh miktani emunah. So as we said before, that if a person raises his voice during davening, that shows a lack of belief. That's only true if you have the ability to generate kavana while davening silently. But if you don't have the ability to daven quietly and generate kavana, mutter, then you are permitted to go ahead and raise your voice. But this is only true if you're davening alone. But I will say, if you're davening with a tzibur, you do have to be cognizant of your decibel level in order not to chas v'shalom compromise anyone else. All right, so we'll have to stop over here for today. Okay, we did good. I think all in all. We'll see how we're good. Good. We'll stop here. Remember, tomorrow morning we resume normal schedule.